I first met Natalie Shapiro back in 2014 at Clemson University. Having enthusiastically read her debut poetry collection, No Object, the previous fall semester in our advanced poetry workshop, we were humbled that she accepted our invitation to read a few poems in front of us in the spring. Having personally been invested in Natalie's talent for tonal complexity and colloquial language alongside formal structures on the page, I found myself completely impressed with how she managed to elevate, or perhaps further complicate, the content and overall tone of her poems in a live reading. All that really just to say, I realized that Natalie is very funny. Laugh out loud funny, even. A realization that helped me acquire a greater capacity for nuance in the reading of poems. Changing gears a bit, Natalie has said that poems are a good way to have a little distillation of a few ideas, a way of recording a convergence of different thoughts and emotions. I've always been happy reading Natalie's work to see such a compelling convergence of thought and emotion, where some would try to impose a separation of those two things. Her poetic speakers muse on past and present worlds and their place in them, perhaps even in an often endearingly self-deprecating manner. As one of her speakers notes, Mozart had his harpsichord, I have my ugly mouth. And another, dirt on my chin and I wonder, am I already in the ground? Like a toy turned real, I cannot shed the sense that I have died. The poet Kathy Fagan has said that Natalie is a rare creature in the poetry world and in the world at large. She's an intellectual, she's an activist, and she's an artist. She's a person who's forging connections between poetry and politics, between art and contemporary culture. Coming back into contact with such a charismatic and special individual makes me feel like I'm meeting up with an old friend. And so, in the spirit of friendship, I'm happy to let you all know that Natalie Shapiro is the author of No Object and Hard Child. Her writing has appeared in The Nation, The New Yorker, The Believer, The New Republic, Poetry, The Progressive, and elsewhere. She's the professor of the practice of poetry at Tufts University and an editor-at-large of The King in Review. She holds degrees in creative writing and in law. She's worked as a litigation fellow with Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and she has taught at Kenyon College, The Ohio State University, and the Columbus College of Art and Design. Her awards include a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship, a Ruth Lilly Fellowship, a King in Review Fellowship, and a Great Lakes College Association New Writers Award. I'm very excited that she's here. Welcome, Natalie.
This is a beautiful venue, and I'm just like, I'm really excited to be here and appreciative of you all for coming out. Many thanks to the program for having us, and to Aaron, who's just a really amazing person and writer and mentor, and to Keith, who drove us around all day and put together this reading twice. So I'm gonna read a little bit from my book, Hard Child, and then some new stuff. I had kind of a tough pregnancy when I was pregnant with my daughter, who's now 4, and a lot of this book comes from notes that I made during that time. So the first poem is called My Hand and Cold. Of surgeons putting their knives to erroneous body parts, stories abound. So, can you really blame my neighbor for how heading into the operation, he wrote across his good knee, not this knee, the death of me, I'm never half so bold. You will feel, the doctor said, my hand and cold. And I thought of the pub quiz question, which three countries are entirely inside of other countries? I bought the bound 1,000 names for baby, made two lists. one if she's born breathing, one if not. The second list was longer, so much that I might call her, if she were never to bear the name, never to turn to it, suffer shaming, mull its range and implications, blame it, change it, move away to San Marino, Vatican City, Lesotho. Hard child. So I had two lists of names for a girl. So what? The president's allowed to have two speeches in case the hostage comes home in a bag. The geese in the Metro Park don't want for breadcrumbs, despite the signs proclaiming the land provides them all they need. I was a hard child, by which I mean I was callous from the start. Even now, were I to find myself after a grand disease or blast among the pasty scattering of survivors, there is not one human tradition I would choose to carry forward. Not marking feast days, not assembling roadside shrines, not marrying up, not researching the colloquialism Staten Island divorce, not representing paste pearls as the real things, not recounting how the advent of photography altered painting and soured us on the acrylic portrait and thrust us toward the abstract, sent us seeking to capture in oil that which film would never be wasted on. Umbrella stands, unlovely grates, assorted drains, body casts. I typically hate discussing the past and treasure the option, rarer and rarer, to turn from it, as when Kay's twins were born, and one of them nearly died. I don't even remember which. That's how much they got better. Absence, that which never stops appearing. A sea-bound creature once believed to be a single body is actually a thousand small fish stuck together and sucking. You will never hear me disparage this arrangement. Being myself composed in haste and subject to uncoupling, I too am put together to come apart. A bird screams out my window, like an alarm I have set to notify me when a bird is there. I cannot say what everyone means when they emphasize that the faulty ring on the Challenger costs $900 only. I never wanted to be an astronaut, never asked for any stretch of sky to die in. I'd rather go here, in the beachhead's gristle or tucked in a tunnel vent. I just haven't done it yet. And I know I frustrate God, who built me for endings and never says anything but, "You had one job!" That is my God impression. The title of this poem is a quote. It's called, "What Will She Go As?" It was not lost on anyone that the baby was due to be born near Halloween. What will she go as? We made a list of iconic infants: Moses in the rushes, manger Jesus, baby Jessica, slipped down a well in 87 and rescued on live TV. Some people credit the Gulf War scud with commencing the age of cable news, but it was baby Jessica, no contest. Even so, I prefer the Lindbergh baby. Both parents could dress as Lindbergh, matching leather jackets and flap hats with appended glasses, bomber brown. This costume works the best if the baby is nowhere to be found. Not horses. What I adore is not horses with their modern domestic lifespan of 25 years. What I adore is a bug that lives only one day, especially if it's a terrible day. A day of train derailment or chemical leak or cop admits to cover up. A day when no one thinks of anything else, least of all that bug. I know how it feels, born as I've been into these rotting times, as into sin. Everybody's busy. So distraught, they forget to kill me. And even that won't keep me alive. I make my home not with horses, but with a little dog, who sees poorly at dusk and menaces stumps, makes her muscle known to every statue. I wish she could have a single day of language so that I might reassure her. Don't be afraid. Our whole world is dead, and so can do you no harm. Teacup this. To my young daughter, I sing the songs my mother sang to me. Which is to say, to my young daughter, I sing a bizarre selection of breakup tunes of the 60s and 70s. I should have known you'd bid me farewell. There's a lesson to be learned in this, and I learned it very well. Now I know you're not the only starfish in the sea. If I never hear your name again, it's all the same to me. That does not seem right to sing to a baby. Yet here I am, and here she is, bed sprawled, unblessed, and so perhaps like the starfish. Yes, one creature of more than the world requires, as I am unceasingly reminded by pamphlet mandates, blanket labels, alerts to lay her always up. It's awful to be a person. That's why from my lovers, I've always demanded to know what kind of a dog I might be, were I ever a dog. And don't say teacup this, toy that. Don't pick a dog that must travel all over stuffed in a bag like a filthy magazine. Don't take it lightly when I say, of all the men I've been with, there are only a few I never would allow to hold my child. I consider this a triumph. So I used to work at this job where they had a ceremony to commemorate people's multiple of 5 years of working there. And the people would stand up and they would get a present that was wrapped and it had like a bow on it. And I went to this ceremony and I noticed that the people who had been there for, most of the presents were like little, but the people who had been there for 10 years were getting like a huge box. And you can't see what's in them because they're wrapped. So I just leaned over to the person next to me who had been working there for much longer than I had. And I said, what are they getting in that like huge box? And she was like, for 10 years, they're getting a blanket with the name of the employer on it. And then she was like, I remember getting that blanket, but what happened to it? Oh yeah, I buried my dog in it. So that is the jumping off point for this new project that I'm gonna read some poems from now. Some of them are about work and some of them are about getting buried and some are about both. And the first poem I'm gonna read is called Have At It. When you work here for 10 years, you get a blanket. The blanket has their name on it, not yours. I am conducting an anecdotal survey of longtime employees, and I have yet to find one person who uses the thing to keep warm. M reported placing it between her children and the dirt before they all sat down to a meal outside. S recounted how she'd wrestled it out of a half-stuck bureau drawer to wrap her beagle's body after he died. She buried that dog herself in her bloomless little side yard and registered embarrassment when the meter reader caught her there intoning over the body with a hymnal. But why should she be embarrassed? It certainly can't be beneath us to bless our animal dead when all our scientists do all day is endeavor to prove that great apes mourn, that elephants mourn, that houseflies mourn, that when a fiddly ficus succumbs, another ficus keens in its earthenware. We would like to conclude that everyone is recognized in death. Unseen as we are in this life, it's all we have. This poem is called "My Hair Is My Thing." The symphony is out of money again, and no wonder. All those violins, the twisted strands and sponges, who could not think of torture? Last week, I read a novel about a man so awful that when he died, I wept because it was fiction. I wanted it to be real so I could watch him really die. I wanted you to die also and to be feted with a lengthy organza-filled funeral so that I could make a big show of blowing it off. I decided to go out and get a tattoo of your funeral with me not there. But apparently it's illegal here to tattoo a person who's crying. The trend is to be interred with beloved possessions, pearl trim gun, gold watch, whatever you got. Some people recoil at the waste of it, but not me. These contused little objects of wealth, they're disgusting. I just pray we have earth and shovels enough. I pray we have bodies enough to bury them all. California. We often ate late by flameless candles and took turns choosing how best to be disposed of. I want to be buried. I want everyone to be buried. I realize there's scarcely a spare acre left in the ground, but I just can't do without the indecorous transit from parlor to plot. I need the array of daytime headlights jolting the arid access road, the only remembrance that matters. Don't make a speech. Years I spent wondering whether the man who attacked me, in his memory, did the event of it persist as a dull sort of flash. And then he died and became himself, just a flash in the mind of the world. And now I wonder, is he anywhere? I don't believe in hell, and also I don't believe in nothing. So that leaves only heaven. I have a couple questions. It is my understanding that the weather in heaven has only a single setting, which is pleasant. I haven't spent real time in California, but friends of mine who've moved there say it's difficult, absent the changing of the seasons, to remember when things took place. With reference to always the lodgepole pine and the low-bent needle grass, you get confused. Dates and sequences, even the people involved, you can almost imagine the whole thing with somebody else. Magpie. Unusual rain of late, and a new weed that resembles concertina wire is threading itself through the dirt. Seeing it makes me think of never seeing it again, how I will miss its upstart greenness after I lose everything and am thrown from this home, which will be soon. It'll be someone else living here then, hiding an emergency key in a bucket, up late snaking the bath drain, or early doing sit-ups on the painted floor. It'll be someone else walking a mile and a half to the store called Magpie, buying a gift for whichever friend's baby, a rattle or a small shirt with a transit map. The name Magpie is meant to conjure up some gorgeous, inky creature culling treasures to bring back. But if you really get close to a magpie's nest, you see it's all trash. So I live in Boston, kind of close to Boston Logan International Airport, not as close as some people live and not as far as others. But a big issue where I live is airplane noise and like where are the airplanes going to go and how are they going to get to the airport and you know sort of how loud an airplane is in your daily life is correlated with how much money you have. And so this is a poem that's just sort of about things that people want but don't want, and where do they go? And it's called Good Share. An airport, like a hog farm, like a landfill, like a graveyard, has to go somewhere. An airport has to go somewhere, so why not here? I nominate you and you and me to roil in our respective beds while planes fly so low overhead we can tell what makes they are. The yowl of the Airbus, the Boeing's Gregorian roar. At least they drown out the rest of this inexcusably human night. Long neck bottle greeting the side of a passing car, strange chanting. The neighbors with their nonstop innovation in the arena of sex offender registry drinking games. View the mugshot, guess the offense. Drink a shot if you're wrong. 11 men in 10 locations. Guess which two guys split a duplex. Drink a shot if you're wrong. Plug in the ocean in order to find out if anyone's currently in the ocean and if we, consequently, should avoid it. Do you think we should avoid it? Drink a shot if you're wrong. Drink while you can, because I heard from a dead guy there's no alcohol in heaven. I also heard no alcohol on earth. If you're drinking right now, buddy, you're in hell. And this is the last poem that I'll read. Thanks so much for having this reading. It's called Some Toxin. This is what we get. This is the penance for extending and extending the human lifespan. Now we can live 120 years. But those years are increasingly spent being bombarded by adorable profiles of the world's oldest people. Interviews about what keeps them ticking. The secret is always some toxin, like bacon or vodka. And the joke that ensues is also always the same. The chemicals preserved him. That is fine. But just once, I'd like to uncrumple the metro section and find that the key to long life is rage and trauma. That bitterness girds the organs in equal measure. If I could choose to be born in any era, I would opt to predate these longer lives. There's just so much violence always. Better to have it visited on you back when your attackers would end up dead much sooner, when you would die sooner too. All I want is for someone to understand me. But it seems my keenest friends and I, we've scattered. We've struggled for peace, for permanence. And somehow in that struggle, we've ventured far from each other. This is what we get. This is the penance. Back when we all died younger, we would lose one another and dutifully wait to be reunited in heaven. We wait for that still, but now in the absence of heaven. We say, someday we'll find each other, year after year on Earth. Thanks.